Hello and welcome back. In today's podcast, we are going to go through just a question answer session with myself. So we're going to go over everything. From what I know, I haven't read through the questions yet. My sister has taken it upon herself to use my Q&A over the last month on Instagram just to pick as many solid, good questions that she thinks people would find valuable. So we're just going to rattle through these. Now, I've been told there's a mixture of mindset, fitness, everything. So it's a bit of a different podcast. It's just going to be rattling through this, and hopefully you get a ton of value. And if you ever have any questions, please feel free just to ping me on Instagram. I'm more than happy to do my best to answer these. And I do get through quite a lot. So we're going to put half an hour on the clock, and we're just going to go through as many as I possibly can. And if you want me to expand any more of these topics, you just have to simply say it. So the first one, really, really simple. What is your training routine at the minute now you're going into a gaining phase? So really, really simple. Your training routine, there's no perfect one, even though you'll hear me say that online. The split I am currently running, and training split is just the way you break down days, is a push. It's a pull, push, legs, day off. Pull, push, day off. And the only difference with my days is, so it's pretty much a push, pull, legs, but the only difference is I never train more than 3 days in a row. I always take a rest day, that way you know you're training hard enough, because if you don't feel you need the rest day, you're not training hard enough, simple as that. And the only thing is, whatever my weak points is, I put them at the start of the day. So for example, on the pull day, I actually put delts first. On the push day, I actually put biceps first. And on the leg day, I actually put calves first. They're the main body points I'm looking to bring up over this gaining phase. So really, really simple. Next question, how to build confidence. So when you break down confidence, it's a very multi-dimensional topic, and I feel a lot of people get it wrong because they think getting in shape is going to do it, building their following, getting more money. These are all layers that add up to it. And the thing is, what I want to highlight is you don't build confidence from what you have, it's from what you've done. So you build it by, that's why you might know a good-looking individual who doesn't actually feel that confident. And it's because you have to build that stack of proof you are who you say you are. And you'll always hear me say it. That's the exact reason I done the Wim Hof challenge. That's the exact reason I'm focused so much on the process. And it's because you build your confidence by doing things you find difficult and by acting like somebody who is confident. Now, I don't know about faking it till you make it, but actually doing the things that a confident person would do. That's why, for example, over the last year, I will walk up to a very good looking female and have a conversation. It's not because I'm trying to fucking pull her. It's because realistically, that is reps. And by doing reps, you get better at it. And what is a confident person very... What is the main reason most men, women want confidence? It's so that if they're single, they feel confident themselves. Or even if they're in a relationship, they feel confident themselves. You can wear clothes, you feel good. A lot of people think body confidence. But confidence is also your confidence in oneself to complete something or do something. So what I mean by this is backing yourself. Like, do you have the confidence that you could learn another language? Do you have the confidence that you could walk up to somebody and hold a conversation? Do you have the confidence to be topless on the beach? These are all different layers and dynamics of confidence, because you can be very body confident in the gym, take off your top, be on the beach, but you can struggle to have a conversation with somebody. You can struggle to back yourself. So confidence is, it's not just one part of it, because I think it gets thrown into the pit of just that person has confidence or they don't. Most people have confidence in areas of their life and they don't even realize it. Like if I ask you to make a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, you are confident that you can do that. You don't question it. It's really, really simple. I ask you, are you confident in your job? But remember the first day you were in your new job, you probably weren't that confident. And the thing is, over time, you build that confidence without realizing it. And Alex Ramosi always says this, and I think it hits home so, so well, is you build confidence by doing something so many times that it becomes boring. See, now for me to walk up to somebody and hold a conversation, it doesn't give me that, like, do you know that heartbeat where you're like, boom, 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 and you're almost thinking in your head, like, fuck, this could go wrong. It's the same as whenever I was running into burning buildings with the fire service. I used to think, holy fuck, and your heart rate beats through the roof. But you do it that many times, it becomes normal, and people go, how do you do that? And it's because it's the same as public speaking. You don't build confidence through thinking it's going to happen or building your body and it transfers across. You only build confidence in that one area by doing it so many times it becomes boring. That's the same with your new job. I think that's one a lot of people can relate to. Anybody that's been their fitness journey, remember the first time you walk into a gym, it feels odd. Remember the first time you approach somebody from the opposite sex or you walk into a room full of new people. And this is the thing, your confidence can come and go depending on not just your mood and energy and how you feel and what people say. But also, if you don't use it, you lose it. And I always think if you don't sharpen your tools, they get blunt. So if it's been 5 years since you've approached somebody to have a conversation, you're going to be rusty. You're going to be shit. You're only going to get good at it by that many times that one, it doesn't stress you out. Two, you go into flow, and then the reps build, and that is all life is, and that's all that confidence is. It's just somebody's done more reps than you. If somebody is more confident in camera, confident public speaking, more confident with women, more confident in the gym, more confident in their job, more confident with taking on challenges or backing themselves, it's because they do it that many times that it builds that. That's the exact reason why I've done the Wim Hof, because I was nervous around it, was unsure, but whenever you do something that's challenging or makes you have to really double down your identity or back yourself, that builds your confidence. So that is the best way to build it, is by, I don't like the idea of just saying, push yourself outside your comfort zone. But whatever area within confidence you're struggling with, lean into that area. It was the exact reason why I'd done the Wim Hof or I'd done the MMA for 6 months. I wasn't overly confident with my physical capabilities fighting. And I'm not saying I'm gonna start fighting people in the street by any means, but I wasn't confident there, and that holds you back. Whereas now I've filled that gap and I feel far better for it. Next question, how do I have so much energy? So a lot of people will wonder how I get so much done, or how I get quite, like, how are you so positive? Firstly, I'm not always positive. Nobody is positive 24/7. I get bad days, I get good days, I get everything in between. The difference is what you do on them days, regardless of how you feel. So I'll use techniques like, for example, like a gratitude journal, which people are sick to death of hearing, to reset my thought process. So if you're having a bad day and you write that out, you're gonna feel better. You still won't be fucked to write it out or want to write it out, but writing it out will make you feel better. If you're comparing yourselves to others on social media and it's getting you down, then writing out a comparison journal works really well. And that is where you list out why you're jealous or comparing yourself to that individual, their body, their money, their fame, whatever it is. You write out reasons that you wouldn't want their life either. Even if you don't fully know the individual, write them out and make sure that list is double, if not triple, the length of the other. And then lastly, you write out every reason possible that you wouldn't trade your life for theirs, and that resets that. And the thing is, that will reset your mind frame for being more positive, because it's neuroplasticity. Mo got it, which is like the, I wouldn't say the number one happiness expert, but he's a really in-tuned individual with happiness. He's wrote books, and he frames that for every one negative thought, you need about 9 positives to rewire the neuroplasticity in your brain. So whenever you break things down, I think that's a really good way to look at it. And it, maybe you'll not get 9 positives for one negative, but even if you can get a couple, it should make you feel better. And don't have the expectation that every day you're going to be happy. The goal is to be content. The goal is not to always chase happiness, because that's like chasing a carrot. You're going to be really happy when you propose to your partner, whenever you get a promotion, when you get in shape, but to be content at all times is the key, because to be content with where you are is more important, because that's like chasing goals. Like, I'll be happy when, or I'm happiest when I'm walking or in the park or with family. You're putting a feeling with an outcome, and the problem is there, whenever you break that down, it's not ideal, because it puts you in this thought process of that you're not always happy and you're chasing happiness. So then in that pursuit of happiness, you're actually telling yourself and feeling like you're not enough, or you're not complete, or you're going to be happy down the line. Whenever you can be very content, and that's enough. And that's my own opinion on that. In terms of having more energy, it's because I balance things really well. Not in terms of actually my life. My life is very unbalanced to an extent. I feel like it's perfectly unbalanced. This is the best way to explain it. But what I mean by this is I focus a lot on the day-to-day energy so that I'm in flow, right? And what I mean by this is I go to bed at the same time, including weekends. I wake up around the same time. I'm usually in bed for 9, out cold for maybe 9:30, 9:40. I know that's very precise. And I'm up for in round at the latest like 5 a.m. And that gives me 7.5 hours sleep roughly. I keep that really consistent. I have the same bedtime routine. You know, I don't use my phone 60 minutes before bed. I don't use my phone the first 60 minutes of the day. I don't use social media really at all, because I find it just drains me and I lose hours upon scrolling. So I use, like, on my phone, I've got a black and white app. So I go into settings, accessibility, display and text, color filters, and turn it black and white. I also use Opal, so I'm not scrolling. So that manages energy. Because a lot of the time, it's not that we can't get enough done. It's the fact that we're not managing energy. Like, one of the main things I notice all the time with my clients is that if they ever struggle to get something done, I always go, watch your screen time, and they'll never send me it. And it's because that is usually where 90% of people fall down. If I ask you right now, how many hours a day do you spend on your phone? you probably wouldn't want people to know. And that's when you know there's an issue there. It's like a habit, it's like a bad habit. And when you're slightly ashamed of that and you sweep it under the carpet, that's gonna affect your mood, your energy, and you're also bluffing yourself. And I feel like that's key, because I don't wanna be known as the person. I don't wanna tell myself I'm that sort of individual. If you're self-aware of a problem and you sweep it under the carpet, that says a lot about your character, and that's the difference there. But in terms of managing energy, other things I do that really, really help is I focus on cognition of my brain quite a lot. So what I mean this is, I might take supplements to help. So a really good example is, during the first couple hours of the day, after the first 60, 90 minutes, I'll have caffeine, and you will find that then it flows better. You don't get as much crashes. About 7 hours before bed, I don't use caffeine anymore, because the drug's half-life is about 7.5 hours. So it can flow into the night and affect your sleep, so you don't want that. So what I maybe will use later in the day is stuff like Alpha-GPC. I get mine off Supplement Needs. I'm not affiliated. It's just, you'll get half the dosage of Yealand. So if you get 600 milligrams in 2 tablets, you only get 300 milligrams usage. I use stuff with like L-theanine, stuff like that to help me boost my mood, my energy. And that's the same reason that I actually do the cold water. It's not because necessarily the health benefits or anything like that. It definitely doesn't help you build muscle. I do it because when you break it down and you look at it, it gives me the energy boost I need, and I find that really beneficial. I don't know where you can hear, the rain's just started my conservatory. I have no clue how to change the mic, so if this does act up, I apologize, but hopefully it doesn't. Along with the energy, I also make sure I manage where I go. I don't expect myself to have energy throughout the day constantly, so I take regular breaks. I also use small things to reset myself. A mindset coach once gave me an idea of making sure that you have different rituals for different routines. So for example, I will never drink coffee before the gym. I'll always have an energy drink because the smell is different, the taste is different, and it gives me a different boost of energy. Whereas you have different rituals and routines for different things, it helps you crank up and crank down. So that's why you've got a bedtime routine. You know, no phone, chamomile tea, I'll watch some relaxing telly, something really simple. Versus, whenever I'm getting up in the morning, I try and get daylight exposure, I try and get up, I get caffeine in me after an hour, bit of workflow to get the mind ticking, and then get stuck into my gym session, whatever needs done. I've had a mindset coach who always related orange to energy. So he will eat oranges, drink Glucozade Sport. Sounds odd, but that'll help him boost his mood, boost his energy. So it's just about building in what works for you. I think most people don't score their days, score their productivity, score their energy. Whereas for a long time period, I've done that. So I find out what works for me best in a day-to-day routine, when I need my wee breaks, when I need my caffeine, when I need my cognitive enhancers. And you build that, and then it means you get more of a flow. You do not need to optimize it to where it fucks with your head. You just need to realize that sometimes people optimize too much and they try and make their life picture perfect. And that's actually gonna go against you, because you'll lose your life in optimization. I'm all for making it better, making more quality, but at the same time, sometimes you just have to do the work and bring the energy. But I think realizing that you're not always going to have it is half the battle. How long have I been training? Very straightforward question. 12 years. Now that is a long, long time period. But I think over that time period, I've trained 5 days a week every single year. Apart from my first 3 years of training, I trained 6 or 7 days a year, which was the most stupid thing I've ever done. Your body only grows when it's resting. Whenever I cut down to 6, then 5 days, then even there was a time period during the fire service, the initial 3 months of training, where I'd done 3 or 4 days a week, and I grew so well during that period as well, because the more you rest, the more you grow. And I think a lot of people forget that. One thing that I would highlight there is I don't think I've ever missed a session. I tried to go back as far as I could. I have logbooks the whole way back for 10 years. It's funny because I have logbooks of me dumbbell pressing, videos of me dumbbell pressing for chest, 18 kilogram dumbbells, 14 kilogram dumbbells, which is about, I think that's like 40 pounds for anybody American listening. And now I would dumbbell press 132 pounds or 60 kilo dumbbells for reps. And it's nice to see that, but it's also like, it's been a decade. Like if you give your, I wouldn't say give my life, but you have a habit for a decade. If you want to learn Spanish and you put in an hour 5 times a week for a decade, I would like to think you'd be pretty good at it. It's just reps. And I think that's really, really straightforward. Do I do any mobility? I do absolutely none whatsoever. I definitely should. I think as I get older, I probably should even more, but I just don't. Static stretching is shown before sets to reduce output and affect your lifting. It is actually shown, though, if you do stretch a muscle for, like, there's studies that show this. If you stretch your calf for a full hour, forced stretch, so past where it should be, there's a machine that does this. They've done it in studies for an hour a day. It actually grows. So it shows you how important stretching is to grow, but you just don't want to do it before your set. So maybe in between or maybe after is best. Do I struggle with body dysmorphia? I think everyone does. I think in this day and age where online, as soon as you go on Instagram, you can get bombarded with topless photos, people in shape. And very rarely you'll see somebody upload a photo where they look bad, because as much as people don't want to admit it, I think a lot of social media is signaling to the opposite sex or signaling to others. That's why it's all highlight reels. Whereas I feel like that's one of the reasons my platform does so well. I try and share the highs, the lows, the laughs, and take none of it serious. Some days I'll feel more bloated, some days I'll feel leaner, and I try and do that mix and give everybody like a full round circle perception of it. But I definitely have, like, that's one of the reasons I cleansed my Instagram before and went to zero following. So like, I stopped following everyone because I found it was just full of jacked individuals that I was comparing myself to. It wasn't even looking at females, it was like looking at dudes that were ripped and pro bodybuilders. And then you're comparing yourself to that 0.01% of pro elite bodybuilders that you don't even want their life, because all they do is eat chicken and rice and train. They're no fun. You don't realize it, but a lot of that sort of community is really fucking boring. I've been there, and the more you go down that route of bodybuilding, the more I find most of them tend to become boring because it's so routine, versus I find a nice balance between that, and that's me being straight. Like, I do think you will bounce in and out of body dysmorphia at times, but it's just being aware of that. Like, it's like saying, I'm never going to care what anyone else thinks. You will care, but it's just snapping yourself out of that thought process with the comparison journals, the gratitude journals, and also just reframing your mind and removing these triggers. Like, for me, the reason I cleanse Instagram is because when you remove the trigger, you don't have to change the response. And I think that's really, really key, because if you can remove the trigger, like if you can remove the food from your house, it makes it a lot easier to avoid it. If you can remove that negative input to your head, it's ideal. That's why I encourage anyone to unfollow somebody that's not educating you or entertaining you. If the inspiration is very, very difficult to call, because I got asked in a podcast the other week, who inspires me? And I paused, and it took me ages to answer, because I don't idolize anyone. I don't know if that's healthy. I idolize traits within individuals, but never the full individual, because nobody is complete. You can warp your own reality. So for example, my answer actually was my sister and my mom, because they have traits that I struggle with, which is don't get me wrong, I'm a very fun individual, but they can switch off far easier. They're very good people, some of the best I know. They're hilarious. They're that's what I want to be known for, not for just more muscle. I enjoy being around them. It's their energy, it's their humor. They light me up, and I want to be that individual to others. And that's one of the main things that matter most. So me in 5 years is sort of that's who inspires me, and that's who I want to be, because me right now inspires a younger version of me. And I think that is probably one of the best things that you can sort of get asked, is who inspires you? And whenever you look at it, it's probably traits. It's probably not the full round individual or specific things they do. Something different, very, very simple. Somebody asked, how do you find time for the gym as a busy student or a busy parent? They're two different questions. For me, it's one of the things, you just have to prioritize it. And it's not as simple as saying, just get it done. It's prioritizing what you can actually and are willing to do. For me, for example, me getting up that super ridiculous early, keeping that super early bedtime, it's not because I necessarily want to. It's because I can't fit in everything in my day otherwise. I can't fit in the training unless I train around 5:30 to 7 or 6:30, because I'm just too busy with work. So it's a prioritization thing. And as a result, I think Oliver Burke says this really well. It's not picking what you want to be good at. It's picking what you want to suck at is so important, because you're not going to have time for everything. It's just being straight. Like, you can try and fit in a social life, a girlfriend, family, career person, a side hustle, your fitness, Joe, all these other things, learn a language, all these new habits and things you want to do, and travel. But you need to realize what comes up top first. And I think it's Warren Buffett that says about, you want to outline your top 20 goals for the next year or 2 or 5 years, and then circle the top 3 and get rid of the rest. And you need to prioritize that, because it's not about doing more, it's doing more of what matters. And when you chase too many rabbits at once, you catch none. And that's why most people feel burned out, because they're trying to balance too many plates. You'll be perfectly unbalanced, but you need to pick the main goals that are going to really fulfill your life. And a lot of people chase I want a six pack and I want to build my money and I want to build my income and I want to start property and I want a family. But what is going to matter to you most? Is it the family? Then that comes number one. That's what the most important thing is. And don't stress yourself out about the rest, because the reason you can feel down is because you're giving yourself too many goals at once. And that's something I actually have got very good at. Like, for example, I done the Wim Hof Challenge. That was my main focus. Now my main focus is on building my platforms more, helping more individuals, and they all align, while also traveling. So that's goal number two. And number three is not, but it's sort of like more of a, so number one, platforms, number two, travel. And then number three is really just trying to make sure that I have some fun and plan that in. So they all interlink, but the key is making sure you've clear goals, but you're focusing the inputs. So don't just pick goals, pick how are you gonna achieve these goals? And when you focus on the input, that's key. So how am I gonna build my platforms, right? Well, right now I'm posting X amount of times per week and the quality is 6 out of 10. So if I double my inputs, I should get double my outcomes. If I double the work in, it should go from a 6 to 8. If it should be better quality. Number two, how am I gonna make sure I travel? Right, well, I'm gonna pre-plan it. And that's the same with how I'm gonna fit fun in. If you don't plan the fun in, like it's like a date night with your partner. If you don't plan that in every Friday night, it doesn't happen. Life gets in the way. It needs to be non-negotiable. And the problem is, if you're trying to spin the gym and a million other things, your priorities shift throughout the week. And then the problem is you actually don't achieve really what you want. Oh, Jesus. Hopefully that helps. I'm just very, very thirsty. I'm not used to talking without a break. Thoughts on TRT, which is testosterone replacement therapy in men. Personally, I think once you're a male and you're over 30, your test levels do start to drop. I need to read the research a bit better. And I will be probably more than likely going on TRT for that period, no doubt. Because as your natural test levels drop, your quality of life drops, your sex life drops, testosterone dropping also leads to, you know, low energy, low mood, low sex drive. We're talking here everything as a male that you're building up from. And you also see men talk about their prime, and it's usually actually just before test levels drop off, like around that 30, mid-30s. So for me, that's a process where I will want to continue building muscle. I will want my energy, my mood, my sex drive, the quality of life. And for me, I have no problem probably, to be honest, self-medicating with that when the time comes, because I'll just do the bloods and ensure that my test levels stay optimal. That'll ensure that I'm operating at a healthy level. I don't see the problem with that at all. It's like a HRT for females during the menopause. You know, it's hormone replacement therapy to an extent. I don't see any harm in that, but obviously personal choice, it's completely down to you. I'm not advising you to do it. That's my thoughts and my honest opinion. I will be doing that whenever I hit that age and I do it. I'm 28 now, so I'll probably even start early, probably around 30. That's just me being straight. How much, all right, I'm trying to see it. Oh, good questions. There's oil up for 600K. Look, that I don't even know what that is. Something about oiling yourself up for 600K on Instagram. Look, I'll celebrate it, but I don't know about that. I'll see what the fuck that is, and we'll go from there. I don't know if people would want that. How do I move on after a breakup? It's been 18 months, almost 2 years. Fuck. That's a difficult one, because the first part of that I really want to be open and honest with is that if you're struggling to move on, the first thing that I want to highlight to you is that you might feel like you're caught, but the problem is you're not. You're only keeping yourself looped in there. If you're checking that person's Instagram, you're following up on them, you're not working on yourself. You need to really remember that breakups make or break you. And there's a lot of individuals that get broken by this. And it's okay to be broke initially. What you want to do is go to your fellow men or fellow women and talk about it openly. You're not looking petty. You're looking action steps. This is the same with therapy. Don't just go and vent and just give your feelings. Get action steps on how you can improve your life and move forward. And I think that's absolutely key, because a lot of people don't do that. You never want a pity party. You want actionable steps that are going to improve you. So what I would do, and what I have done, because my relationship ended probably about 18 months, 2 years ago now, is make a list of where you fell down. Don't worry about that other individual. And even if you're like, it wasn't on me, it was. Take responsibility for it, not to a point where you beat yourself up, but take responsibility what maybe made you less attractive, where you fallen down in your own life, and become a better version of yourself. So do you need to build your finances? Do you need to build your body? Do you need to build your mindset? Do you need to build your discipline? Do you need to be less dirty? Like say, for example, you're a very messy individual. Write out what unattractive traits or habits or how you're not fully stacking and lining up, and then work on them. It's exactly what I've done. And then you'll build your confidence back over time. And you want to build yourself to a stage of where you actually feel like you deserve better. Because for me, it was one of these things where when that person gives up on the relationship or you decide to call it quits, that fire's went out. You can't rekindle wet wood. It's just as simple as that. You can't relight that. You either need to both decide, right, we're going to bring new wood in. And even if you wanted it to work and that person isn't, you cannot light a fire with one side wet on either side. So it's really, really key that you put that to bed. And you need to bury that old self of yours in the ground, because who you were then, who they were, no longer exists. You're constantly evolving. You're a different person, they're a different person. And if they've decided not to stay with you, because that's what it sort of sounds like, you need to realize you deserve more than that, and you have to show up for yourself. You have to build yourself into the best version you can be. And then when you become so good, it'll become insignificant. And that's not probably nice to say for them, but it is one of these things that when you build your character, you build your self-worth, you'll know you deserve more. And that's the reason this had to happen, so that you can become better in every area. I would completely, you don't need to block them, but you need to stop looking them up on social media, remove them from your thought process. Do start to slowly get back out there, start talking to individuals, especially if it's been 18 months. You need to do the reps of walking up, talking to people. You don't need to necessarily go on tons of dates, but I definitely think doing a couple of dates is smart. I don't believe in the thought process, you only get over somebody by getting under somebody, but I do believe in the thought process of, if you analyze and you keep overthinking it, give yourself a game plan, put in the work and move forward. And if you struggle with this, come to me. And I'm all for therapy, but I think the one flaw with therapy is a lot of therapists for young men aren't in a position that the young man wants to be in. I only listen to people that I want their life, and I know that sounds odd, or I want that area of their life. So if you don't have that, I'm going to struggle to take weight in your word. And I noticed that with a lot of therapists I went to, because they're not in a position I want to be in. They almost end up looping around and talking to me about how I'm doing so well in business or something, or fitness. And it's like, you'll never get a fully complete individual. And every single individual, my mum, my sister, my dad, a therapist, will all have advice and good points and be able to help you in any area of your life. But the difference is, does it hit home and will you implement it? And for me, make a list of things that you can improve on that didn't go well in the last relationship. Improve in these qualities, these traits. Make yourself the very best man possible. Make yourself so good, so better in every area that it becomes insignificant, that you deserve more, that you build your confidence, you built yourself back up. And it's going to take time. But if you don't do that work, you're going to see that you're just stuck in a catch-22, and that's not going to do you any use. And just realize that you can still have love for that person. It doesn't mean you're still in love with them. And that's the same for them and you. You need to just walk away. As a man in particular, now this is very, not manosphere, but it's never going to come. You need to just treat it like it's never coming back. This idea of, oh, maybe you're keeping in the long finger or hoping, just cut it dead, bury that old self here, bury the relationship and move forward. It sounds a bit extreme, but that's the best thing for you in the long run. How did you become so passionate about your jobs? You only become passionate what you're good at, and that's me being really straightforward. Reps. Nobody enjoys the gym day one. What happens is, the reason there's so many online coaches is because it's the first place a person usually gets a win is fitness and health and confidence and shape. And then the thing is, they then go, this is what I was made for. This is my passion. It's actually probably not. It's just the fact of, this is the first place you've actually had wins and you've done well. And now, because of that, you want to do what you're good at. And then you get praise, you get a little bit of ego, and then all of a sudden you actually fall in love more and more of it, because you've got a result. It's the same reason I fell in love with fitness, then business, then property. It's because it's what I become in the process, but also because I became very good at it. So I don't know, Cal Newport has a book, Against the Passion Hypothesis. So in other words, nobody's passionate about anything. You only become passionate about what you're good at. There is 1 in 100 individuals that find their passion and know from the moment, but most people have to become good. I think for me, one of the things that, good question, is if I had to go back in time and tell my younger self 3 things or 1 thing, what would it be? I think these questions are odd, because if you go back, and I don't like the approach of, regrets build you who you are. I feel like that's a cop-out answer. I do believe in it, but I also think people don't want that. I would say, number one, don't put as much pressure on yourself. Pressure's good, no pressure, no diamond, but internal pressure for no reason, whenever you're working as hard as you are, is going to burn you out, give you stress, and not allow you to bring your best self to your family or anybody around you. So that'd be it. Number two is, it relates to that. It'd be, if you're not having fun, there's no point. You'll do better work, you'll do better in life in every area if you're having fun while doing it. Stressing out about getting your steps, and stressing people out about going for walks, or stressing yourself out about business and then other people, it's no fun. And that realistically for me, a life without fun is meaningless. Like my main things in life are, you know, family, fitness, fun, and fulfillment. And family is obviously family, fitness is fitness, fun is fun, and fulfillment is like work. And if I'm covering them four F's most days, then I'm happy out. And I feel like for me, it's one of them things that really does add up. And I would say that's really it. Maybe number three is just make sure that you always ask yourself, at the end of your life, are you going to be happy with how you've lived it? And just keep that in the thought process, because death is, this sounds grim, but I look out over my back garden in my mum and dad's house, and there's a graveyard, and it always relates to me that it is very, very close. Like, you don't realize it, but like, think about the last year and stop waiting for particular moments to be good. Like, I've read this thing online, I think this really hits home. If you're waiting for your holiday to really live it up, right, and you have two holidays a year, and you're now my age, 28, you've maybe got your, say, 40 good years left, right, so 68, just for toxic. You have two moments a year, two holidays a year, and that's all you look forward to, that's what you live for. You realistically have 80 moments, that's 80 memories, whereas if you think about 80 days, 80 memories, 80 weeks, whatever it is, whereas if you focus on making sure every day matters, and it's that quote of, if you can't enjoy a cup of coffee in your back garden, you'll not enjoy a cup of coffee in a yacht. Stop trying to build up to the big moments, because for me, I've always found that you get that post-show, post-gold blues, and they add up massively. I'm laughing now because my dad's just came out in his robe and his boxers to the left of me while my little dog takes a poo in the garden. So that is how strange the setup is. I'm not always staying at home, but I think that's hilarious. That's one of the reasons I love coming home. Like, I have my own house up the street, and it's one of the reasons why I stay at my ones, because it's the small things. It's how your dog runs up to you. It's how my dad is hilarious for even realizing it, because his hair is all fluffy and looks like the Weedos man. If you look up Weedos cereal, you'll know exactly what I mean. It looks like a mad scientist. But for me, it's them small moments that really add up and really make your life better. And I think taking in more of them is key. And that's sort of the wisdom with aging that I wish I knew when I was younger. But that's all part of learning. I think apart from that, a favorite philosopher, probably modern day, the likes of Naval Ravikant. I love Alex Hormozi's stuff. I love all that Chris Williamson podcast. But I would say favorite philosopher of all time is probably Marcus Aurelius. And if you don't read The Daily Stoic, I do really recommend it. Ryan Holiday breaks it down to modern era really, really well. Marcus Aurelius is a genius, and his reflections are very good. So I really recommend that. That's where I get a lot of my thought processing from. I'm just reading through these. This last one I can dive into. How's date life, and does having a big following and the rest help? I sort of identified this on, I ran through this on my Instagram the other day. I'd be lying if I said it didn't affect it. Like, I've noticed the last time I was single, I had 1,800 followers, and now I have 1.5 million on all platforms. And it's just more eyes on screen. I think as much as you don't want to admit it, it is a status signal in today's day and age. Like, people do, I'll be honest, they do treat you differently when you've got a following. It'd be a lie to say they don't. I don't treat myself any differently, but I do notice the change. And it's not major, it's just because I've worked on myself. I think it does show status, but, and people hate that, but that's all society is, Joe. It reflects the hard work. It's like a physique. It's not the abs that are attractive. It's not the following that's attractive. It's the fact that they probably had to work hard for it. And that's ambition, that's drive. But realistically, dating life for me, I pretty much didn't have a single date all of 2023. I pretty much swore it off when I'm working myself. I believe if you don't work on your wounds, and I was still sort of healing, I was still sort of working on traumas, I was still sort of, not traumas, but necessarily myself. Like, I just need to be better in every area, because whenever I go into, like, I'm not a one-night stand sort of person. That's just not me. So I know whenever I'm going to date, it's actually for a partner. So I want to be the very best version of me, because when I am that, I'm not looking for gaps in me and them. Like, I'm looking for somebody to add fun to my life. I'm not looking for somebody to add this to my life. I'm just looking somebody else to be the right partner for me. And that's energy. I'm not looking for a specific type of individual. I just know the quality I want added to my life. And that allows you to ask for a certain standard because you are of one. Whereas, I'm not saying this, but I do believe a lot of people settle. They take what they feel they can get rather than what they want. And I won't do that. I think that's a life of quiet desperation that most men do lead. They don't realize they're settling, but subconsciously they are. And I know that sounds a bit harsh, but I think that it's not every man. It's by any means, a lot of people are in love and it's crap. But I do believe that a lot of people don't shoot for the stars or really push for it in that regard. And whenever you work on yourself so much, it builds that up. But yeah, for me, it was non-existent. I've asked plenty out. I've put in the reps anyway, just so that iron sharpens iron. So if you don't use your tools, you lose them, as I said. But I definitely notice a lot more people in the DMs. Like I said, like this on a different podcast, like my Instagram's like fucking Tinder on steroids. It's fucking bonkers. And there's, like, for all the mom jokes, like, you'd think there wouldn't be that many in there, but there's fucking so many. I don't know if that's the fact I'm 28, so I'm probably in that middle ground age, but fucking hell. Like, young Tony at 18 would have had a fucking field day, which is hilarious. But yeah, like, I'm going to be getting back in now. I would love to document the process on YouTube, like, a date and the whole journey, but I probably talk about it, but I don't think the person would probably appreciate me bringing a fucking film crew to film the dates. So that'll be a different experience. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's definitely going to be something good now over the next year. It's going to be in there with the goals. But yeah, like that's me being straight as fuck. And I wonder, is there any last touch points that would be good? Because this is well over half an hour now, so I'll wrap this up. Yeah, really, really straightforward. And how tall are you? I'm about 5'7". That's a very, very easy one. Yeah, and look, well, favorite food and favorite cheat meal. I'm going to be honest, my favorite meals are just, it's the people around the table, it's not the food. It's always really important for me. Like, the reason that I love going out for meals with my family is nobody uses their phones, or going out for coffees. Nobody uses their phone. They sit around the table, the conversation is good, the atmosphere is good, everybody's looking forward to it all week. That is what makes meals out so special for me. It's not the food. For me, in terms of, like, mains and desserts is where I'm at. More of a sweet tooth sort of person, so I'm a main and dessert. For me, my favorite sort of things are that come to mind is hazelnut, like stuff like Kinder, the hazelnut creme sauce out of Marks and Spencer is fucking, do not buy that. It's like Biscoff. It's fucking dangerous. Do you know, like the Biscoff spread, the hazelnut spread is dangerous. Kinder Hippos ice cream, Kinder cookie pies, that is like my weakness. Like that is me being honest, like that is weakness. From a main, I'm a big fan of like curries. I'm a big fan of like Indians. For me, that's probably more what it is. I don't really crave that sort of food that much. My favorite food is more sweet stuff. And the funniest thing is like whenever I was bulking, I never had that. It's just because whenever you're dead, your flavors in your mouth, your tongue actually upregulates that because your body sees sugar, for example, as very calorie dense, good to store fat and help you. So that's one of the reasons, like post diet, people are more likely to binge, they're more likely to break that. And that's one of the reasons why the first 3 weeks after the diet, it's actually more important to be very mindful of what you eat than the entire diet, because the goal has been achieved, rebounding happens so easy. And your body's actually made to make you rebound. Your hunger goes up, the goal's ticked, your flavor goes, your palate goes up in terms of like actual sensitivity. So that's why that all kicks up. So even more now than ever, post-diet now with me, because I'm about 3 weeks post-diet, I've done 6 weeks diet, 2 weeks maintenance, 1 week gaining. I am still eating lots and lots of veg to fill myself up. The reason being is just to stop me, and then I'll start to incorporate more and more foods that I love because I'm not likely to binge or break on them. So it's just not shooting yourself in the foot. A favorite cheat meal apart from that, I just made like donuts, all them sort of things are my fucking shout. Like panu chakalas, like me, like, oh, I am typical sweet tooth, like dessert head, like that is what I'm about, like, but more so stuff like you'll get not in restaurants, more so stuff you will get in the likes of like an ice cream parlor, or like that is my vibe, or like a tray bake or a blondie. Oh, I'm going on a rant now. Look, I think that's pretty much it. The last one is creatine breakdown, time and dosage before and after hair loss. Look, there's been one study to show that creatine loses hair, and it was with rugby players. I think it was almost 20 years ago now, and they never tested them for any other substances. So it could have been steroids kicking in, it could have been anything adding up to it. And there's never been one more study out of that. I think there's thousands that showed that there was a correlation between creatine and hair loss, right? And people might think, well, one study's enough. It's not. It became back insignificant because what they do is they put all the studies together and have a meta-analysis, which means they put all the studies together and go, right, well, this is the conclusive, because one out of 3,000 studies might come up a false positive. Like, that's pretty much what that is. Or there's other variables that weren't taken into account. So a lot of the time when people quote research, they don't read the methods. It's like, for example, a lot of people go, aspartame causes children that are born to have issues with brain function, or, and this is where all the scaremonger comes, but they also didn't take into account the fact that in that study or studies, women are two different age gaps, or they didn't monitor age. So you know, obviously the older a woman is when they have a child, the more likely the child is to have a disability or, you know, anything like that just because of age. They don't take that into account. So then that makes the method of the study invalid, because if all the women that drank diet drinks were 40 plus versus all the women who weren't at under 20 given birth, it gives two different, it doesn't take into account that variable, which means the study's invalid. So meta-analysis shows that it doesn't make you lose hair, like at all. So do not worry about that. Timing doesn't overly matter. If you want to be optimal, just take it at the same time every day so you don't forget. Take them with carbs slightly better, but to be honest, it doesn't overly matter. I just take it in the morning with my green shake. I shouldn't even really take green shake. I eat that much veg, but it's just habit. Dosage, about 1 gram per kilogram of body weight, or per 10 kilograms body weight. So 1 gram per 10 kilograms of body weight for creatine. So if you are a 90 kilo male, you want 9 grams a day for optimal. If you're a 50 kilo female, you want 5. The reason being is, think about it, the larger you are as an individual, the larger dosage you need. That is why, for example, you do not tranquilize a cat and an elephant with the same fucking dosage. So I think a one size fits all 5 grams is okay, but it does help to actually think about that. And that's pretty much it. Look, we'll wrap her there. I'll do more Q&As because I think people get a lot of value from it. Hopefully that was just mindset, fitness, everything you need. If you have anything you want to run over, I really appreciate it. If you could like, share this, subscribe to the YouTube, rate the podcast, it means the world to me, and I can't thank you.